Moto Casino, American Social Casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, American Social Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
COTA has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Before we get started, just a quick note to say that some of the names in this podcast have been changed to protect their identities, but the stories you are about to hear are very real indeed. Please check the episode show notes for trigger warnings, as listener discretion is advised. If you would like to be a part of our now award-winning podcast, we would love to hear from you. Do get in touch with your stories, affair@curvemedia.com. Just before we get started with this episode, a quick trigger warning. In this episode, there are some small references around baby loss, so please do take extra care if this is something that is particularly of concern. Welcome to the Affair Podcast. I'm Anna Williamson. Now, if you don't know me, I'm a relationship therapist, coach, and TV personality. Now, this podcast will unveil the secrets behind modern day affairs as we explore everything from emotional affairs to rebuilding trust after betrayal. One in five people have admitted to having an affair, but it's a topic that is rarely explored and remains taboo because it sparks such powerful emotions and judgments. Each episode features a different real-life affair story told by the people involved and offers insights into the emotions, causes, and consequences of infidelity in today's world. From the motivations behind affairs to the impact on relationships, we'll uncover the raw truth behind one of the most painful aspects of human relationships. So, without further ado, let's meet today's guest. Joining me on this episode is Lisa. Welcome to The Affair, Lisa.
Hello, thanks for having me today.
Oh, it's very good. It's really is my pleasure. How are you feeling about talking about this today?
Yeah, I feel quite nervous, but at the same time, it's the first time I think I've ever spoken about it from start to finish properly with anyone, especially in a professional capacity. So I think it's going to be really good for me as well. Yeah, because it's a bit of a crazy story, let's say.
So obviously we're talking about infidelity, and there are typically three roles in an affair. And would you like to share with us which role that you have taken on?
So I was the other woman.
You were the other woman.
Yeah. Okay. But also it could be looked at that I was also cheated on. It's like two sides to it. It's hard to say, but it'll all come clear when I tell my story, I guess.
And therein lies the complexities around infidelity, and that it really is not one size fits all a lot of the time. Okay, so Lisa, bring us back to, it's very brave as well, by the way, especially to say you haven't actually discussed this properly. I know you've shared it with friends, but first of all, by way of a timeline, your situation, how long ago did it happen, or are you still in it?
I'm out of it now, but it was back in 2021 when it first started. I downloaded dating apps and I was going on quite a few dates, I would say. I was pretty, very open to going on to dates with, like, I didn't judge people or, you know, I was decided to be a bit more open. So, yeah, I was going on quite a lot of dates and I matched with this guy. And basically, he wasn't much of a texter. I could tell that straight away when I matched with him. So it kind of fizzled out very quickly, but we did exchange numbers and we were speaking a wee bit. And then
just through the app or via numbers?
It was a wee bit through WhatsApp, but and then eventually out of the blue, he sent me a text message. And I was like, oh, this is, I didn't expect to hear from him. Like, I didn't really think he was interested. So he texted me saying, hey, what are you up to this weekend? And that's when I was actually had no plans and I was trying to find a date. I thought, I'm going to get myself a date this weekend. I'm going to try. So when he messaged, I thought, perfect, excellent. I can go on a date with him. Why
not? You want to fill that void. Yeah. You just wanted the date. Yeah.
Yeah. So he turned around and said, I've actually, by one of my friends, been tasked to bring a girl with me to his party he's having. Do you want to come? And I did think, oh, that's a very bizarre first date. But he did say, why don't we go for dinner first so you can decide if you like me or not? And if all goes well, we'll go to the party. So I thought, you know what? Something different. I'll do it. So we agreed to go for dinner. So I met him at the restaurant. And as soon as I saw him, I did kind of think, oh, he's a bit of me. He was definitely my type. And I'm actually a farmer girl. I come from a farming family. And he was wearing very farmer kind of clothes. So straight away, I was like, this is unexpected. I didn't know he was a farmer type boy. And I could just tell he was.
And that was a green flag for you. That was something you were into, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Like any other farming girl listening to this will be like, oh, yes.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yes. I'm one foot in the world of being a country bumpkin. I hear you.
So we went for dinner and on our first date, we were comparing tractor photos. And if you're a farming girl, that's just like fire. So I was like, oh, I didn't expect it because I hadn't really spoken to him much. So I didn't know much about him. But turns out that his family had retired and bought a farm. So his parents had a farm. So this was amazing. So straight away, I had so much to talk to him about. And we had loads in common. And the date was just, we were getting on so well. Sparks were flying. I fancied the pants off him. I just thought, oh, yes, this is amazing. This is like the best date I've had so far. Like, really fancied this guy.
And can I ask as well, what was your dating and relationship history before that? Had you had relationships?
Yeah, I'd had like 3 serious relationships, but by this point, I'd been single for about 2.5 years. So I hadn't really had any serious ones until recently. So, right. So basically, I was single again and I was looking for the one. We were both just instantly flirty with each other. We were getting on like a house on fire. I had that excited feeling inside of me, just like, oh, I didn't get that feeling very often, but with him, I definitely had it and it was very exciting.
So how did the rest of that date then end? Because obviously, did you go to the party?
So we were at the bar and we were just chatting about like our dating history. And he'd made this comment of, God, I can't remember the last time I pulled a girl at a bar. And I just looked at him with this kind of seductive look saying, well, what's stopping you now? And then he grabbed me and kissed me. And it was just like a lightning bolt just hit me in the chest, like, oh, it was just
fireworks.
Absolute fireworks. It was amazing. So then we were just kind of getting more kissing and chatting and we were just having a lovely time. And then next thing you know, he whispers in my ear, do you want to go have sex in my office?
Oh, okay.
And we're walking over to his port-a-cabin office in the middle of this construction site. And that was probably one of the most erotic moments of my entire life to date.
Giddy up. Yeah. I have to admit, Lisa, I can imagine why. I'm in this with you right now.
It was like something you'd see in a movie and it was just like, oh my God.
Clear the desk, off we go.
Yeah,
it was. Hearts, flowers, fireworks, you name it.
It was crazy. It was one of the wildest nights of my life. We agreed that we would see each other again. So I went home and then it was the next day I had texted him just saying, hey, I'd love to see you again. Had such a good time on Saturday. It was amazing. Basically, he'd said, listen, I'm just out of a long-term relationship. I don't know if I can really get into another serious relationship because I don't think I'm ready for that yet. But I really, really loved spending time with you. And I just want to be honest with you. Like, I don't know if I'm ready for this yet. And of course, I was really gutted because I just thought, oh man, like this was him. This was Mr. Perfect in my eyes. So that's when I basically, in my head, I knew I could win him over. Like, I know that sounds bad, but I kind of knew I could. So that's when I said, oh, that's okay. Like, we can just you know, you're here all by yourself in the city working on this project. I know you don't know much people here. So if you want to hang out as friends, or if you want to still be, you know, casual, we can have kind of casual fun with each other, then I'm open to that as well. And as soon as I said that, he was just like, yeah, okay. Because I think he definitely wanted me in his life, but he was his commitment scared, I would say. So yeah, that's when we decided, okay, we'll still hang out with each other and we'll keep it casual. We'll keep it cool. And I kind of thought, you know what, I bet you I can win this guy over. Like, I'm convinced that I can. So what I'll do is I'll kind of take a step back, but I'll say that I'm here. But then, yeah, as soon as we said that, then the next 2-3 weeks, every spare minute he had, he was with me, pretty much.
Oh, wow. Wow.
Yeah.
And actually, what strikes me is how quickly this motored. So you'd obviously had this date. There was this very, very big attraction between the two of you. You'd had a wild night of passion. You say it was the most erotic moment of your life. But quite quickly then, the next day, it was kind of intentions, really, which is what I would recommend people to do, depending on the situation. But he was very clear at the beginning that actually he didn't want anything, you know, commitment. You, just so I'm clear, ideally you did want commitment though, but you were just hoping. And there's honestly, there's no judgment here, just purely clarity, because I think a lot of people, reason why I'm going over it, a lot of people fall into this position. I've been in this position actually, where in my past, where what I really want is the person, but they're telling me that they're not quite in. And there's a part of you that goes, well, I'd rather have something rather than nothing. And that's what I'm hearing from you, right?
Yeah. So I want,
which is dodgy because it can lead to a lot of heartbreak, just as a bit of a caveat there. But I get it.
I wanted the commitment, and I was lonely. Like, I was really lonely, and he made me feel so great about myself that I just craved that attention. I craved that, like, companion. And he, I could tell, was the same. I could tell he was very lonely too. And we both needed that. And I could tell he needed it. I definitely did. So that's why it was just the way that he was kind of speaking about, he kind of spoke about his ex, and you could tell he was sad, and you could tell he was really stressed on the job he was on, and he was all by himself, and where he was living was like a shoebox. It was a tiny little bedsit of a flat. We were there on the first date, we ended up there. Most of the time though, he would come to mine because I had a lot bigger flat. Or we would go out on dates. We would go out quite a lot and spend a lot of time with each other. So, and I was convinced that I could change his mind. I was convinced that I'm going to make this guy realize what he's missing if he didn't commit with me, because I know what I can feel here, and I know he feels it too. Like, this connection we have is unreal from day one. It was so intense.
Were you falling in love with him?
Yes, I was. Yeah.
Was he falling in love with you?
So that kind of rolls on to the next part of the story, whereby this was about 3 weeks in. I was having a girls' night. So I had all the girls round for glasses of wine, and I was telling them all about this exciting new man I was with and getting them updated and all the things we'd been doing. And it was about 11 at night. And next thing you know, there was a knock on my door. And I lived on a ground floor flat at the time. So I opened up the curtains, and there he was on the doorstep. And I was like, oh my God, he's outside. That's him. It's him. He's outside. And all the girls were just like, what? I went to the door and I opened it, and he just stood there and went, Lisa, I'm head over heels in love with you. I love you so much. And I just had to come here. I had to see you because I have well and truly fallen in love with you. And he'd had a drink, but he was on my doorstep, and all the girls were sat behind me like jaws to floor. Like, what are we witnessing right now?
It's like Notting Hill. It's literally like Notting Hill.
Yeah, he just turned up. And then that's when I said it back. I went, I've fallen in love with you too. I love you too. And all my friends were there to witness it. So it was, it was real.
I mean, at this point, Lisa, this sounds like one of the most lovely textbook, you know, Hollywood love stories. So what happened next?
So basically next, he then sat me down and said, listen, I've got something to tell you. Before I met you, I was having somewhat of a midlife crisis, and I actually was applying for other jobs because I was really questioning my whole life and what I was doing. And he explains to me that when he was 18, he did a gap year and he worked in Alaska, really randomly, because he had family out there and his family lived next to this airfield, like a private airfield. Mm-hmm. And when he was over there in this gap year, he ended up going and working at that airfield just because he really enjoyed it. They knew the family. They went, yeah, of course, he can come and help out. And he would be in the garage where all the planes were. And eventually they allowed him to go on flights with them because they did like cargo, like it was like private cargo plane airfield. That's what they did. And eventually they let him fly and they let him have a shot flying. And he always said one day he was going to go back and get his pilot license and go back to Alaska. So when he told me that he had started contacting people before we dated, and it all, he hadn't kept me in, like, he only just told me this in this moment. He then said, I've been accepted for a job. And they've basically said I could fly out straight away and start a new job with them, training to be a pilot.
Wow. And how long had you been dating at this point?
So at that point, it was about 3 months, 3.5 months. Mm. So by then, like, you know, I was madly in love with him. And of course, I was upset. I was really upset. But at the same time, I didn't want to be the reason why he didn't pursue his dreams. He'd only just met me. What happens if we didn't work out? And it would be me to blame for him not taking this once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. And I didn't want to be that person that held him back. I didn't think that was fair. Saying goodbye, it was the hardest thing. It was ridiculously hard.
And where were you? At home? At the airport?
We were at my flat because he then was going to drive and fly from England, you see. So he left my flat up in Scotland. And then he left and that was it. So he went and he really struggled at first. He missed me a lot. I was also really struggling too, because if I didn't hear back from him, I would be like, what's going on? Why are you not replying? I was becoming like a bit of a paranoid mess, like thinking, oh my God, is he leaving me already? And, you know, it made us both go a bit crazy, a wee bit. Well, maybe crazy is not the word, but I got really paranoid and overthinking about everything. So we did kind of decide, you know what, let's call it off. That lasted for 4 weeks. 4 weeks later, I get an email because we decided to block each other's numbers too. And I get an email from him saying, I miss you. I actually can't stand this. Like, I need you back in my life. So numbers were unblocked, back to the beginning, back to us chatting every day, mm-hmm. as much as we could.
And back to full attention, like, you know, full I love you, all that, yeah? All the emotions, yeah, straight back.
Yeah, exactly that. And he was sending me photos of all the, like, amazing photos of, like, the northern lights from the cab of the plane, all flying over Alaska and flying over mountains. Like, he was sending me these incredible photos of all the things he was up to with his flying experience he was having. And it did look amazing. It looked really, really good. And then his dad got sick, so he had to fly back. So this was about, he'd been away for 4 months at this point, and then he flew back to the UK. And then he actually ended up staying for the whole summer. So me and him picked up back where we left off. He was obviously with his dad a lot, but any spare time he had, he was driving up to Scotland to see me. And we were back fully, fully in love, fully back together again. And then he had to go back and do final exams for his pilot exam that he wanted to do. So that's when we said, right, just go do that and then come back. Because he wasn't sure if he liked Alaska, but he didn't want to throw away everything that he'd worked on already. So it roughly would have been about 4 months left. And then that would be him qualified. He'd have enough air mile time, and then he would have enough time that he would then be able to do his exam and then come home. So again, it was another 4 months of long distance, but we did it. We were on the phone as much as we could be. He would always phone me because he had like an international number that didn't cost, it was free for him to phone me, whereas it would cost me for me to phone him. So it was always him that called me when he could. And yeah, we just were working long distance. And then the next bombshell hit. So he is actually half Austrian and his dad was from Austria. And his parents were talking about retiring and moving back to Austria. And they decided that they were going to do it, and they did. So when it came to his time nearly finishing in Alaska, he then turned around to me and said, "I'm really sorry. I think I'm going to go to Austria. I think I'm going to move there to be with my parents because they're getting so old. And I honestly can't imagine not living in the same country as them whilst they're getting more frailer. And I just feel like I need to go and be with them in Austria. But listen, we'll figure out a plan. Me and you, we're not done." Oh, of course not. We're going to make this work. And then he said that he'd managed to get a job in Austria.
Wow.
And yeah, so his auntie at the time, who was an Austrian lady who lived in Austria already, had managed to get him a job with the UN.
Okay.
Of all places. So she'd managed to get him this job at the Vienna office in the UN. And he basically, because of who his auntie was, that's how he got the job, because she was quite, not high up, but she was working in the UN in a good position.
Okay.
So he was like, "I've got myself a job. I actually can't believe it. I'm going to be working for the UN. And I was like, "Wow, like this is crazy." And he was going to be working on like infrastructure, which is similar to what he does. He's in construction. So I was like, "Okay, cool." So, and then he started speaking to me about, "I've got this probation package that when I pass my probation, I then get a house and I'll get like a car and all this stuff provided for me. So, you know, let's get you moved out to Austria."
Oh, okay.
So he then said, "Why don't you move to Austria and we can start a new life together? Well, you can be a, like, I'll provide for you. You wouldn't even have to work if you didn't want to. We'd be put up in a house by the UN. We'd have all this like life provided for us, essentially, with all these allowances that he would get through this job."
I mean, it sounds absolutely wonderful. I mean, but how did you feel about that when he'd said that?
So I was a bit at first like, "Oh my God, how can I just up and leave everything?" But I live away from my family. My family live in a remote Scottish island. So I don't live close to family now. I just have friends where I live. So I'm used to living away from family. It would be my friends that would be the hardest part. But in my head, I wanted a future, a life. I wanted to be his wife. I wanted children. I wanted a family, everything. So for me, it was a no-brainer. I should go to start my new family and my new life with this guy. And, like, we'll build on
it. And he'd given you the big green light. He said, "I want you to come here. I've got it all mapped out for us. If you say yes, we're in," right?
Exactly. So he said I'd have to wait, though. And this was about, I think it was about March by the time he moved there. It was like the following year in the March. And he said by Christmas time, hopefully he'd be past his probation. He would hopefully have a house sorted by then. And that would be a good ideal time for me to come and move to Vienna with him. So it gave me quite a lot of the rest of the year to life plan. His whole life in Vienna started, and every day he called me, it was just like, oh my God, it was wild. The stories he would tell me, all the things he was getting up to. And that kind of leads into the next part of my story. So he was working in this job, and sometimes he would be unreachable because he was working on army bases and all their phones would be taken away because they're working on some high profile army job. Or he sometimes was in meetings with NATO. That's what he told me. And they all had to give their phones to the security person before they would go into meetings. So he would be unreachable. There was one day he collapsed with heat exhaustion and ended up in hospital. And that's why I didn't hear from him for a couple of days. And I was so worried and concerned and was going to jump on a plane to come see him. But he's like, no, I'm fine. Don't worry. Another one was he was pickpocketed on the U-Bahn. And he then sent me an email saying, hey, my phone got pickpocketed. I've lost my phone. You'll have to email me for the next week until, because I work for the UN, they're having to do security clearance and who's got my phone and all that stuff. So I won't have another phone for about a week. So you'll just have to email me during that period. So we were emailing for a week because of that.
Sure. You had no reason to suspect that what he was saying wasn't what was happening, right?
Exactly. Yeah, and then when he did get his phone back, then he was like sending me photos like every second week maybe of all the places he was being flown out to in Europe for different jobs he was a part of and doing. But in the middle of all this as well, he was flying back regularly to see me.
Oh, okay.
So maybe once a month he was flying back to see me, so he was still coming to see me. So I did get to see him still. So from him being in Alaska to him now being in Austria, and at least I got to see him like at least once a month, I was fine. I was coping with that. And I knew I was going to be moving out there. And, you know, I was still happy, optimistic. I thought this is still working really well. Everything's going great. Because obviously I was talking about me moving there, about us getting a house. Like, we actively spoke about getting married. And he said, listen, I've never been married before. I'm really against marriage, but I would love to, I would make the exception for you. And he'd already told me he was getting me a sapphire engagement ring, which was blue to match my eyes. He already asked me, who do I ask for permission to marry out of your family? Because my dad isn't really in my life. So he wanted to know who was the person to ask. He told me where he was going to do it. And I knew where he was because I told him about this favorite place of mine back at my hometown, and I knew he was going to do it there. And we even spoke about children, how, where we would raise them, how we would, he wanted to teach them German or, well, Austrian, sorry, if we were in Austria, and how I wanted to teach them like my dialect from my Scottish island I come from. Mm-hmm. And we spoke about loads of stuff in detail, all about the whole life we wanted, the marriage we wanted, the children, how we would raise them. Like, it was all very serious talk all the time.
Full works. Yeah, the full, what I would call full committed relationship. This is real. This is where we're heading now.
You ain't heard about Moto Casino? Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto. I like my slots hot. Moto's free to play, like food stamps. In line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic. Keep your eyes on the road. Hop on Moto Casino. Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly. Moto, America's hottest free-to-play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today. Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
October the 10th is World Mental Health Day. Now, a reminder that taking care of our minds matters just as much as taking care of our bodies. This year, BetterHelp is shining a light on the people who make that care possible. The therapists who listen, guide, and help millions find clarity and healing every single day. Behind every story of growth or breakthrough is a therapist who has asked just the right question, shared the right tool, or simply held space for someone to be honest and seen. For me, one of the most powerful moments in therapy was realizing that I could speak freely with no judgment or pressure, just understanding.
And that space to be real changed everything. And it's moments like that that BetterHelp wants to celebrate this World Mental Health Day. If you've been thinking about trying therapy, there really is no better time, whether you're dealing with something heavy or you just want to invest in your well-being. Talking to someone qualified can make all the difference. BetterHelp has over 30,000 licensed therapists and more than 12 years of experience helping people find the right match. They've supported over 5 million people worldwide, with an average rating of 4.9 out of 5 across 1.7 million reviews. This World Mental Health Day, let's celebrate the therapists who help us move forward one conversation at a time. Find your match and take that first step today at betterhelp.com/affair to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, BetterHelp.com/affair.
Yeah. So my friends could smell a rat. That's what they said to me. They were like, we just listened to your totally far-fetched stories and thought, what? No, don't believe that for a second. So one thing I didn't mention was he was a complete tech dinosaur. He was the kind of guy that would get pissed off if he had to download an app to pay for something. Why can't I just give them bloody cash? What the hell? Why do we have to have everything through technology? And he never had any social media, nothing like that. And even when you kind of watched him on his phone, you could just see like he was just a complete tech dinosaur. It wasn't him. It wasn't who he was. Mm-hmm. He would be sitting reading a book at night. He wouldn't be on his phone scrolling. Yeah. That wasn't who he was, right. You know? Very different to me, who I'd be sitting scrolling on socials all the time. So I knew, he said he didn't have social media, and I truly believed it because I thought, well, I know him. I've seen him. He doesn't ever look on socials. He doesn't have, like, I've seen his phone. There's no apps
there. He doesn't scroll.
No. You never see him on socials because he just hates it. It wasn't him. So my friends found a profile.
What?
They found a Facebook profile. And it was a friend's boyfriend. So one of my friend's boyfriends found him.
Found the dude.
Yes. When everyone else went to search for him, though, none of us could find him, but he could. Almost to say he had blocked my entire friend circle, but had forgotten to block one of the boyfriends.
Oh.
So we were like, so that was the first thing they discovered. Then they also discovered a news article, and it was an article from a Scottish town, and it was about the successful completion of this construction project, and the construction project manager was him, his name. And his name is a very unique and very different name. I've never, ever heard that name anywhere else. It's very different. Right. So as soon as I saw it was his name, and it was a construction company, and I knew it was a company he'd worked with in the past, and it was dated June that year, and this was July.
And he's supposed to be in Austria.
Yep. So I was like, what the hell? So it was one night, me and my friend were together, and she sat me down. We'd had a couple of drinks, and she said, Lisa, I've got something to tell you. And my best friend to this day, she'll be listening to this today as well, said it was one of the hardest moments of her life was telling her best friend that the love of her life had been lying to her. And I was like, what? And then she showed me all the evidence on her phone. She showed me the Facebook profile. She showed me the news article. And I was like, what? Like, I didn't believe it was true. I thought, nah. What?
There's got to be an explanation. Yeah, denial.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. So next thing you know, I picked up my phone and I started ringing him and he wouldn't answer. And I just kept ringing. I was not stopping.
And was that unusual for you to do? Would you never have done
that? Yes, because he would always phone me because of this international, you know, line. But looking back, I should have triggered straight away when I phoned him. It didn't have that international tone, you know, when you're away abroad and it's like a beep that comes up.
UK ringtone?
It was a UK ringtone. Oof. And I was like, what's going on? And then it was about 2 hours of constant just phone. I just did not put my phone down. I was like, I am not sleeping until he bloody answers the phone.
How many times do you think you rang him in those 2 hours?
I think I rang him about 30 times and I sent him about 10 texts. He finally answered and went, oh my God, what's happened? And then I just lost it. I had a drink as well in me, so fueled anger. It was not probably not the best conversation, but I let loose and I was like, what the hell is this? Why have I found a Facebook profile? And why is there a news article for you completing a job last month in Perth? And he went, oh, the Facebook, that'll be my ex. Like I actually went and saw her not long ago because we needed, when I came up to see you, because we're currently trying to sell our house. So I knew him and his ex had built a house together. I knew that. And he went, I had to go get my stuff from the house and one of my old laptops was there. So she must have actually logged in and found you or whoever. And then she's gone and blocked you because she's been trying to get me back and I've said no. And I was like, since when has she been trying to get you back? You've not told me anything about that. And he said, oh, I didn't want to like bother you about that, but she's been a bit of a nightmare recently. And I think this is her trying to control me and control my socials. And this is her. And I'm raging about this. Like, I can't believe she's done this. And I will get to the bottom of it.
And was he quite measured when you were speaking to him?
Yeah. Like,
he didn't sound rattled in any way.
He probably sounded a little bit rattled, but he just sounded angry more than anything, to be honest. Like, I wasn't sure if what he was saying was the truth, but he sounded angry. And then he said, oh, and about that article, I'm going to go speak to the company because I left that company years ago. They've obviously just gone on the website and put my name in there. And I was like, no, but there's a quote from you in that article. Oh, they've got the wrong person. It's not me. It's not me. I promise you, Lisa, it's not me. And I was like,
is there, okay. Just in case anyone's thinking this, because this is what I'm thinking now, was there any part of you that wanted to ring up the company and ask if he was still working there?
I think, so this happened, not at that moment, no, because this was like late on a Saturday night. So I then hung up the phone and the very next morning I woke up to a confession.
What kind? Why? How?
So, and this text was like an essay. And in the text message, he had said, listen, I'm really sorry. I've got to tell you the truth. When I first moved over to Vienna, I did get a job in the UN. But after 2 weeks, I was let go because I was so underqualified for that position that it was actually really embarrassing. And I felt like I completely let all of my family down. And I was humiliated that I wasn't able to do that job. And I really wanted to, but I failed at it. So what I did every day was I left the house in the morning because he was living with his parents in Vienna, dressed in a suit. And what I would do is drive around town all day with CVs in my hand and waltz up to any construction site I could find and go and find work somewhere else. Some days I would just go and do like labouring work and I would have like my other clothes in the car. I would change into them. And before I went home at the end of the day, I'd change back into my suit. So my family still thought I was working in the UN in this office job, but I wasn't. I was actually working on construction sites, driving around, trying to find jobs. And I did this for a couple of months. And then he said his ex got sick and his parents, because he was with his ex for over 10 years, his parents were very, very close to her.
Was he married?
And she got... No, they were not married, no. So they were just... Because he'd said to me he'd never been married. He never would get married, but I was the exception. So he wasn't married to her. But he then said she got cancer, which was really sad. And his parents decided to fly her out to Vienna to pay for private cancer treatment in Vienna. So he also told me that during his time in Vienna, his ex had also been living in the house with his parents, but she'd been living in a separate room. He had not been with her. He was not with her. And then he said after her treatment, he felt like he didn't want her to go back to the UK alone because they lived in another Scottish city. So he went back with her to make sure that she was okay. And he went back to their home, the home they'd built together. And when I phoned him, that's where he was. He was in his home with his ex, looking after her. And then he said, I'm really sorry to tell you this, but I need to look after my ex. She's really sick. So me and you are over.
Oh, wow.
So it was just like, what? So,
I mean, how do you even process that text?
I just screamed, and my best friend was just like in such disbelief. Like, she couldn't believe it, but she also just looked at me so angrily and went, I knew it, Lisa, I knew it. I told you this guy was a liar. And she was just comforting me, and I was just a mess. Like, I could not believe this had happened to me. Like, it was just mental. Like, how could you do that? So then I did a proper cold block everything. One thing I forgot to do, I forgot to block his email.
Oh.
So we were done.
And can I ask, did you believe that this was the, like, had you ever heard of this ex until this point?
I had.
So you knew there was this person that he had been with for 10 years.
Yeah. Right. So, cause that was when I first met him, he had told me that he'd just come out of a long-term relationship.
Right. You said. Yeah. So
he'd been with her for over 10 years. They were really serious. One thing I did learn as well about them is they did have a baby together, and the baby died of cot death after 2 weeks.
Gosh.
So he had a lot of trauma with his ex as well. And that's what drew them to kind of break up, because they both never got over the death of their son.
It's terribly sad.
And he said it was really sad. And he spoke to me about it in detail, and he actually was in therapy for it. Like, he wasn't coping well with the loss of his son, but I was there for him. I supported him. And if he was ever down, I was his shoulder to cry on. Like, I was a solid person in his life. Yeah. I really helped him a lot. So I think it had been about 6 weeks had passed. And then an email came, and it was an essay. This was a huge email. And the email was all about, I can't believe I've done this. I'm so sorry. I've got no excuse as to why, but I can tell you now that I've realized that my ex is just toxic, and I left her for a reason. And I just wanted to let you know that we are broken up, and our house is on the market, and I'm being serious. We are not together. I've now moved away. I now live in Perth again. He seemed to be in Perth quite often, but he's like, I live in Perth now. I've got a new job. It's going really well. I've joined a rugby team, and I've just decided to get on with my life. My parents still aren't talking to me since I lied to them about the whole UN job. Like, I've lost all touch with my parents. I'm absolutely heartbroken, but my biggest heartbreak in life is losing you. I think about you every single hour of every single day. You are the love of my life. You are everything to me, and I would do absolutely anything to have you back, and I will do anything it takes to make it back to you, because I am so deeply, madly, truly in love with you. And this essay was a proper him spilling everything out. And I could feel the emotion reading the letter. I was like, God, he is hurting. Like, that's hard. It was a hard read. And I cried and cried, and I really missed him. Like, I really did miss him.
Because you still loved him.
Yeah, you did. I was still madly in love with him.
You can't switch that off, unfortunately.
No. So he then said, would you please give me the opportunity to say sorry to your face? And I decided yes. I decided okay. So enough time had passed. I wasn't as angry and raging anymore. I'd kind of calmed a bit. I'd accepted the situation had happened. And I agreed to meet him. So we met in another town altogether, and we both drove to a point where we met each other. And we went for a coffee. And I remember sitting there I was looking great. I put on the like, you know, I thought I'm going to make him feel awful. So I remember like making myself look really nice and like had his favorite perfume
of
mine on.
It's the classic of a woman scorned, Lisa. That's it. Get the power heel and the power lip on. Show him what he's missing and throwing away.
Exactly. So we met up and he then just explained like how he'd thrown his whole life away, how he'd ruined everything and how he was in therapy and he was deeply troubled and how he was so truly sorry and he knew where he'd done wrong. He knew that he was messed up. He knew he was like, I know this is not normal behavior, Lisa, but I'm sorry. Like, I can't really excuse it, but I am doing everything I can to make myself a better person. So then I kind of thought, well, I'm still raging. Like, I'm not just going to forget what happened. Like, you still did this. And then we decided to go for a walk. And next to this place we met up is like a famous ice cream shop. So we decided, let's go get an ice cream, go for a walk, and let's just talk about life rather than me having a go. Let's just catch up. Because I did kind of feel bad for him. Like, I could see how much he was. I just thought he was a really lost soul. I just thought he was such a damaged, sad, lonely soul. Like, I just saw how much his heart was breaking when I saw him and I felt for him. Like, I felt like he's just so troubled. And yeah, it was almost like I didn't feel angry. I just felt sorry for him.
Do you think the rescuer in you kicked in?
Well, yeah, I think that's exactly what it was, because what happened then was we were standing in the queue to get an ice cream. And I remember all he did, right, he just put his hand on the small of my back and then I just got a whiff of his aftershave and then it was almost like my knees could have collapsed. I was like, oh, as soon as he did that, I felt his touch, I felt his smell. I instantly was just like, oh no.
Intoxicating.
Oh no. It was, I knew like, man, all I want to do is just give this guy a massive kiss and a cuddle and say, it's okay, I forgive you. I just missed him. I really missed him.
I hear that.
He was like, I still was so in love with him. And then
it's the head and the heart, isn't it?
Yeah. So let's just say I went with my heart. I didn't choose my head. And by the end of that walk, we were kissing, making up. He then came back and stayed at mine. And then that was it. We were back. We were back working on our relationship, because he lived a lot closer to me now. So he came through and saw me a lot more often. And he made such an effort with me. He would take me on weekends away. We would stay in like log cabins, beautiful hotels. He took me all over the place on these wonderful trips away, made such an effort with me. And I was just such a happy, happy person again. I had my person back.
Yes, and it sounds like, you know, okay, he's lied to you. You know, he's done everything he can to make it up to you. At this point, what were your nearest and dearest saying? Because the friend of yours that was like, I knew it. Like, where were we with that?
I didn't tell them.
Ooh,
my mum knew. I told her. Listen, I've decided to forgive him and give him a second chance. And my mom is very much that's okay. As long as you're happy and you don't get hurt, I trust you're making the right decision. My mom would never judge me or never tell me that something was wrong. She's always just very supportive of whatever I do. So I knew telling mom wouldn't be the issue. And I knew he had a lot of making up to do. And I felt like I wasn't really ready to tell my friends for, I didn't know how long, to be honest. I knew that if we were going to be serious and have this family, have this marriage, all the things we wanted, they were all going to find out one day. And it was just going to be this is how it is, like it or lump it, I love him and that's it. Mm-hmm. And I knew I would, but I don't know. I felt like for ages I wasn't ready, but reasons being, I still had never met any of his family and I still had never met a single one of his friends.
And how long had this been? You'd never met any family member or friends. And how long had you been, the whole period of time of on and off?
So, well, it was about this point, we were about 2.5 years.
Wow.
And the thing is though, he was obviously away in Alaska. He was then in Vienna. And yeah, like a lot of time had passed and whenever I saw him, it was just like at weekends and it was just me and him spending time with each other. But I had pressed a few times to see his family and I had pressed quite a lot to see his friends. And my words to him was, I cannot vouch for who you are until I meet people in your life that can give me that confirmation. So until I get that, I'm not fully happy yet. I need that from
that's
you.
That's very bold. That's a brilliant, by the way. Brilliant.
Yeah. So I said, listen, like, I need to meet your family and friends. And we would always, it was weird, like, he would always make a point of being like, yeah, yeah, okay, we will. I'll go see if they're free. And then he would never bring it up again. Until I pressed for it again, being like, oh, did you speak to that person and see if they were free that weekend we spoke about? Oh, yeah, they're not. Oh, that's a shame. What about this weekend? We can try another one then. Or did you ask him when else he was free? Oh, no, I didn't. I'll message him again. And he had a way of talking his way out of it all the time.
And did you ever hear him sort of on the phone to friends or on text? Like, could you tell there was a friendship family circle? Because you know what I mean? Sometimes, you know, the phone rings and, you know, you'll hear someone on the phone to somebody. Like, were you aware that there was friends and family?
So if he ever had a call to make, this is something I should have mentioned earlier as well. He would always step out the room. And the only time I ever heard him speaking on the phone was to work colleagues. I never heard him speaking on the phone to family or friends. Or if he was ever with me for a weekend, he would say, here's a glass of wine. Why don't you sit down and watch TV? I'll be back. My mum just wants to run something past me for selling up her house in England, because like he basically did a lot of the finance and all that stuff for his family. I'll take this call outside in the car because I might be there for a wee while. So I was never present when he called his family or his friends. He always took it outside to his car. And again, I believed that because he was, you know, the way he explained it was quite private conversations he was going to have. And he left me happy, sat doing, chilling by myself, and then he would come back. But I remember getting really pissed off, being like, why can't you just take the call in my flat? Like, what's the need to go out to your car every time? And it didn't really occur to me, really. I just thought it was him. I just thought like he wanted to keep that part of his life private, and I respected that. I didn't want to push him, you
know? And with the benefit of hindsight now, what do you think of that?
Well, it all comes clear as kind of the next part of my story. So basically, I've been pressing him and pressing him to meet family and friends. He was at my flat again for another weekend. It was always my flat, or he would take me away. I never went to his because he said, oh, I just live in a shitty flat in Perth. It's much better in Aberdeen. I'll come and stay with you.
So you'd never been to his shitty flat in Perth, his words?
Never, right. Never. No. He once took me up to his work accommodation where he worked up in Inverness for a wee bit. And he took me to the construction site, showed me what they were all doing. And they had this big, massive shared house and like that they were renting. And at the weekend, everyone was away back home with families, but he was there by himself. So I went up there one weekend and there was a hot tub and everything. And we had a lovely time in Inverness. And I could see he was telling the truth because it was just full of all this worker kit bags and all this worker stuff. And it was just along the road from the site. So that's the only time I ever saw a place of his was a workplace. Mm-hmm. Apart from that, I never saw his private place at all. And he was just, his parents owned a flat in Perth and he was staying in that flat. And I never went there.
Got it.
So yeah, where this all kind of comes to a head, I pressed and pressed him to meet up with his family and friends. And then we were out for a Sunday dinner in Aberdeen. And he then said, let's go home after this. I need to talk to you. I'll tell you everything. And I was like, okay, what's this all about? So I was like, why are you acting so weird? Like on the walk home, he was being really like fidgety and I could sense the nervous energy coming off of him. I was like, what is he a way to tell me? Like, God. Mm. And then he sat me down and he went, Lisa, I'm married.
Okay.
And I was just like, come again? What did you just say? And he said, this whole time, I've been married.
What?
This was 3 years later. I found out he was in a marriage with his ex. Well, not ex, it was his wife.
So the person he had referred to as the ex with the cancer, did she have cancer?
Who knows?
But that person, he's been married the whole time he's been with you.
Yeah, whole time.
And where's he been living? All the job in the UN, the Alaska, the Vienna.
You know better than me. I honestly have not a clue, because that was when I was like, holy shit.
What?
You are the biggest serial liar I think I've ever met. And I honestly felt like I was a victim of fraud.
100%.
And I couldn't believe it. He then tried to explain how, but we're going through a divorce. And the reason why I couldn't tell you about her was because my lawyers told me to keep her a secret in case you meddled with the divorce and made things more harder.
So still more lies. She's still more lies, even when he's confessing.
And he said it's because she's going for half of my inheritance, and his parents were very, very well off. And I knew that. Like, he had very wealthy family. He came from money. And it was all got to do, apparently, with me meddling with this really messy divorce because of the money involved. And that was why he couldn't tell me. And I was just like, can I believe a single word? Like, at this moment in time, I physically cannot believe anything more out of your mouth. Yeah. Last year, I gave you the opportunity to come clean, to tell me everything. You know, I took you back. I forgave you. I believed you. You told me that you'd messed up and lied then. And then this.
And that you'd never been married. And yeah.
Oh, he was, and this is like, so there's things now that really, really are, like, it's all starting to puzzle, like, piece together. Mm. Number one, he was not out on the phone to his mum. He was on the phone to his bloody wife.
Right.
Probably saying, I'm on some work trip again, but no, he's staying at my apartment. Like, there was no way that, like, that's what he was doing. That's why he had to take all the calls outside. It was his wife.
Of course, flag number one. When we, do you know what though? Honestly, Lisa, when we have the benefit of hindsight, then we go, oh yeah. But when you're in it, I know what it feels like. I've been in there too, in a, some sort of yeah. way. But you, it, and this is what I say, if people listening now thinking, oh, why didn't you? But you don't. You don't. People are so convincing, and it's so nuanced, these interpersonal relationships, that it is actually very easy to just, okay, because a lot of faith and trust goes into so many things, and some things might be the truth, some things might not be the truth. And then we, you know, sometimes we want to make things fit, sometimes we don't. But as you say, yes, so all along you suspect that, yeah, the stepping out, which is a big flag, just as a generalized flag, is one of them. He's on the phone to somebody that he clearly doesn't want you to know he's on the phone to, and he clearly doesn't want them to know where he really is, because he's keeping all of these narratives going. So that was flag number one.
Flag number two, he would constantly question if I was on contraception.
Oh.
And every single time I would say, I'm on the pill, I have been for years. Like, do you think I'm trying to trap you? And I used to get really angry.
And let me just tell you this now. Everything that's happened to you, Lisa, none of it is your fault, because all you did was trust with an open heart, with all good intentions, and somebody completely destroyed that trust that you put in them. You have done nothing wrong. You have done nothing to feel ashamed about. You should or shouldn't have known anything, because you are not a Machiavellian game player that is a master manipulator and liar. So how would you know? And just, and also what happened after that moment, the bombshell, like, was it a get out of my pub, never speak to you again? I mean, did you speak to him? Did you tell her? I mean, how did that all wrap up, or has it not?
So I've never found out who his wife is. I still have never been able to find her. So he's obviously managed to go and block her socials or whatever. So I still to this day don't know who she is. I have not been able to speak to her, no.
Would you tell her if you could?
Yeah, absolutely. I would tell her everything. Yeah. And I would kind of want closure to find out what is true and what's not. But I know now I'm never going to get my closure. I'm not going to get it. And I've come to peace with that. As much as in my head, I was so like, I just want to know the bloody truth. I'm never going to know the truth from him. And that's it. I just have to accept that. But after that, I threw him out of my house straight away. I went, get out and out of my life. You're gone. And it was a very cold again, this time for a proper email, phone, everything.
Block, and did he accept that? Did he try any oh buts like he'd done before?
Yeah, he was begging me. He was begging me not to throw him out. And what happened after that was he sent me a handwritten letter on the finest parchment I have ever seen in my entire life. This thing came special delivery and I was like, what is this? And I opened it up and it was a 5-page letter. And in the back of it was all these printed photos of me and him. And on the back of every photo, he'd written his favorite memories with me and how much he'd missed me. And this letter was him begging me to take him back. I then looked on my block list. He tried to call me hundreds of times. Like my blocked calls, you can't see, but if you go into this part of my phone, it shows you all the block numbers. It's been trying to call me. Yeah. Hundreds of missed calls, hundreds of times he tried to call me. He left me drunk voicemails where he was crying his eyes out, sobbing. Because the one thing I learned is if you block a number, they can still send you a voicemail, which I didn't know. And he has sent me numerous voicemails, full on crying, sobbing. I miss you so much. Please take me back. Lisa, I've made the biggest mistake of my life. My life is over. I can't live life without you. I am so madly in love with you. Please don't do this. Please take me back. And full on crying on the phone in these voicemails. Like, yeah.
How do you feel?
I had all of that after.
How do you feel when you hear that?
Just anger. Mm. Because I'm like, you know what? Like, no, you told me you were never married. You made such a point of saying that to me and how you were going to propose to me and how I was your wife and I was going to be your future wife and everything. And the whole time you were just lying to my face.
Where are you now, Lisa? Because this is a truly shitty thing to have happened to you. And it's been a couple of years. Have you been able to move on?
So, yeah, this happened. It was last year, actually. It was last year in April. So as of June, so it was like 6 weeks later, I met my now partner very unexpectedly.
Okay.
And yeah, one thing I hadn't mentioned as well was when all this happened last year, we just lost my family best friend to a heart attack. We just lost my mum's sister to cancer.
I'm sorry.
And then he told me that. And then I met my partner. And then my granddad died the day after that.
Oh.
So I went through all of that last year. Last year was the hardest year of my life I've ever had.
Yes.
Because I lost three family members and I lost my best friend.
Lost your relationship.
Because he was my best friend, you know?
I'm so sorry. The grieving process that you must have endured is unfathomable.
Yeah. And so when I met my partner, sorry, I'm going to get emotional because he was just like my angel in shining. Like
he just came. He's a good tears.
He completely saved me, like from such a dark period of my life. And he's the most wonderful human I've ever met. And it's just really wonderful how nice and how much trust and honesty and love and care. And he's got me fully integrated with his whole life. And he moved me in his flat as soon as he found out this ex actually, that's one thing, he started turning up on my doorstep, my neighbours told me, because I was away home after we lost my granddad and he moved me straight into his because he feared for my safety and he just took me in and was like, no, I need to care for you. You're going through a really hard period and you need someone to look after you and I'm going to be that person. And he did.
He stepped up.
He honestly is the most wonderful thing that's ever happened to my life, you know?
Oh, Lisa. I'm so happy you found your guy and that the other guy has not destroyed the trust. And it just goes to show that, you know, there are good people out there if you're just open and allow that to happen and make sure those foundations are there. And I'm just so pleased that he's managed to pick you up, and you've saved yourself too. You know, you really have.
Yeah.
Well, Lisa, thank you so much for sharing your story today. You're an absolute triumph. And I wish you all the very best for what I know will be a really love-filled future.
Thank you so much, Anna. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Affair podcast. If you've been affected by any of the issues raised in today's episode, please see the show notes for organisations who can offer support and advice. Don't forget to subscribe so you are the first to know when a brand new episode drops. But until then, I'm Anna Williamson, and this has been The Affair. The Affair is hosted by me, Anna Williamson, produced by Naomi Channel, and is a Curve Sounds production.
You ain't heard about Moto Casino? Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto. I like my slots hot. Moto's free to play, like food stamps, in line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic. Keep your eyes on the road. Hop on Moto Casino. Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly. Moto, America's hottest free-to-play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today. Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.